Turn my music high, 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 high. Yeah.
You don't know what you're doing.
Sure I do.
Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, agents of change, welcome to another episode of Back in the Black. I'm your host, Frank Mosey II, bringing you episode number 7, Where I'm From. Thank you for locking into this stream. Once again, we're here to get you back in the black. Today, I have 3 very special guests. If you haven't already seen the documentary Heard on PBS, you need to check it out. There's a link on all of our social media pages. At Back in the BLK. Check out Heard. If you haven't seen it, you gotta check this movie out. It's one of the best documentaries that PBS has ever released. A good friend of mine is the director, Martin Montgomery. He's here today to talk to us about the makings of Heard, getting us a behind-the-scenes look at what went into his approach to telling the story, or at least having these individuals tell their story. Also have 2 of the individuals that were featured in the documentary, Mr. Von Johnson, who is a community organizer, and Mr. TJ Thompson, who was an author and a hell of a father. I'm so proud and privileged to have these gentlemen on today to talk about their lives, their communities. This episode is about where I'm from. In episode 1, I told you about the who that is I, and a little bit about where I'm from. Farmville, Virginia, Prince Edward County, Virginia Street, the deep history of racism, segregation, the school closing, discrimination. I talked to you about the triumphs of the Brown versus Board of Education scholarship. And I've talked to you about all the things that we can do as a community to build and grow. That's not just for the community of Farmville and Prince Edward County. That's for every community in the state of Virginia. So today, I definitely want to talk to you about 3 communities here in Richmond, Virginia: Gilpin Court, Fairfield Court, and Mosby Court. Now, if you've seen the documentary, you'll know that these 3 are right around the Richmond City Jail. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no coincidence in that. I want you to think about all of the nuances that take place, the systematic racism, the discrimination, the segregation, the redlining. All these things are part of how we have gotten into the red. It's not by accident, it's by design. So in order for us to get back into black, we first got to have a better understanding of what these communities are like, because we have a perception. And when we have this concept in our head, this perception in our head, it becomes our reality. But sometimes you can't always judge a book by its cover. You can't always assume that you know what you don't know. And until you are able to reach a point in your life where you can stop driving by these communities and start to drive in, to understand that community doesn't mean just your neighborhood, but it means your town, it means your city, it means your state, it means your country. We are a global community. We have to stay connected. And to stay connected, we have to have a better understanding of our stories, where we are, who we are, and how we get back into black. So today, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring you 3 special guests. The mics are on. Let's get it started. Let's talk about where you're from, where I'm from. Let's talk about community and how we get back into black. So ladies and gentlemen, I have Martin Montgomery, TJ Thompson, and Von Johnson as my guests tonight.
I am privileged to be with some great individuals here today. My brothers from another mother, Martin Montgomery from Prince Edward, Farmville, Virginia, hometown. This episode, where I'm from, we're going to be talking about where me and Martin are from. And we have some special guests from the documentary Heard that is doing awesome numbers on PBS and VPM. If you haven't already checked it out, please tune in, take a look. You can go to pbs.org, vpm.org. You can check out Herd. It's streaming live. I have two of the individuals that were featured in that documentary. We're here with you today, TJ Thompson and Von Johnson, two awesome individuals that I've had the opportunity to get to know a little bit here in the past and now in the present. And really looking forward to introducing you to these guys and sharing this story. First, a little bit about me and Martin. Martin and I are childhood friends. We grew up in Prince Edward County Elementary School. Me and Martin were probably best friends.
Yep.
My mother definitely wanted me to have other experiences growing up in Virginia Street. Anybody ever been to Farmville, they'll know a little bit about that neighborhood. Low-income neighborhood, has a lot of challenges, not a lot of opportunities. But my mom always wanted to make sure that I had as many experiences as I possibly could. That community, Prince Edward County, has a deep history of the school closing. In 59, Barbara Johns led the first student walk out. It's a lot of history in Prince Edward County, a lot of controversy that has come up over race and segregation over the years. Brown versus Board of Education was one of the landmark decisions that rose from the school closing. So Prince Edward County has a lot of history, and I just want to kind of put in a little bit of context for everyone, because a guy like me and a guy like Martin becoming friends in elementary school and still being friends 30, 40 years later, right? After that type of history in a town like that, where it could have gone a completely different way, is a story within itself. And I just wanted to definitely have Martin come on. It's been a privilege and an honor to know him over the years. And I'm so proud of the work that he's done, and have him talk about his new project, Her, that's been out for a few months now. Like I said, I want everyone to, if you haven't already checked it out, to check it out. Martin Montgomery, please, thank you for joining the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about where you're from and why you're here with us today.
I'm here because... you know, I love you, man. First,
love you, bro.
And I also love the two guys that are going to be talking as well. Like you said, I'm from Farmville, Virginia, and I was very fortunate to be raised by two educators and that knew the history of where I was growing up, and they were raising children, and they wanted to make sure that we didn't go down paths that we shouldn't be going down, and that we should be having friendships with everybody that we wanted to have friendships with. And that included you, Frank. And I remember as a kid, I think you were probably one of the first guys that kind of came over and had a sleepover. You know, I mean, it's just like we were, you know, like you said, best friends. And I don't know if you want to tell it or if you want me to tell it about your birthday party.
Right.
I'll let you tell that story real quick if you want.
Yeah. Real quick. You know, like I said, I grew up in a neighborhood. Everybody on my street was Black. Martin and I went to school together. I had a birthday party. I probably was about 8 years old. And I remember inviting everybody in my class. You know, your school, you send out these little cards and say, everybody come. And, you know, we had a mixed class. And, you know, I thought, you know, I'd get a Black and white. I didn't know... that nobody would come except for the Black kids. And sure enough, Martin, I think it was maybe one other person, but Martin was one of the only white guys out of my entire class that came to my neighborhood, not just for my birthday, but on several occasions. And the crazy part about it is he played like he was just in his neighborhood, in his backyard. We climbed trees. We were running around, playing tag, coming in the house, eating. I mean, and he was so at home. And so... for Martin and I, we've never looked at each other as being Black or white. It's just we've always been friends. We've always been brother. Martin, I don't know if you want to tell them the story about when you found out about minority scholarships, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to piggyback a little bit on that birthday party. I remember going to that birthday party like it was yesterday, and I just thought, where you live was like the coolest neighborhood because you had a lot of people live very close to you, mm-hmm. Whether it was your family or friends that we were in school together with. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is such a cool place, you know? And I just had a blast. And I knew your mom from, she worked at the school system as well. And so it was just like family, man. But yeah, one thing that was interesting as we got older, I remember in high school, I think it was maybe 10th grade, I was kind of performing like average grade wise and getting, you know, C's and B's here and there. And I remember my mom and dad were like, look, you really need to crack down and get your grades up. And I was like, hey, I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about my grades. I said, because, you know, I'm going to get a minority scholarship. And they're like, what do you mean a minority scholarship? And I was like, well, you know, whites are the minority. So I'm going to go to a school that's, you know, where I can get a scholarship. And they're like, son, whites are not the minority. So, well,
that's not how that works at all.
No, but to give the audience some context about Prince Edward County is that our school system, well, in Farmville, there's, you know, the Prince Edward Academy, which was the private school that came from segregation. And then there's Prince Edward County, which is the public school. So a lot of the white kids in Farmville went to Prince Edward Academy initially to be away from Black kids, that's, you know? Right. And so so my parents made sure that when they moved to Farmville, that we were going to go to the public school and make a stand to other people in the community. And so here I am growing up as a kid, and like my best friends and the coolest people I knew were all Black. And you know, so I thought, hey man, I'm the minority, and it really, and
technically at Prince Edward, you were,
that's right, bro. That's right. And you know, and I was a travel kid. Like my parents, we went to New York, we went outside of Virginia. And so I never really thought about race in that way, you know? And so it wasn't until I really got into college. And I didn't get a minority scholarship, but I did get into school. And I remember going, well, where are all, you know, what it's flipped, like in a drastic kind of way. And I made it a point to make sure that the Black students that are on that school would not think that I was wanting not to hang out with them because they're Black. And so I went out of my way and almost probably too much, you know, like, you know, there's a Black guy in the school. I'm going to go sit next, or in the class, and I'm going to go sit next to him. Hey man, what's going on? You know, they probably thought I was crazy, but yeah, I mean, so that's an interesting way of growing up, but I'm very thankful for it. And I have to give it all to my parents, to, you know, one little insight about my parents real quick. When I first started playing baseball, the only baseball league there was tied to that Prince Edward Academy, the private school. And so that weighed on my parents, and they just thought that wasn't right because there were no Black kids that were playing. And so my mom and dad got other parents that felt the same way. And for years, they developed the Dixie Youth League baseball team.
I played there.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. So it was an amazing opening day. They made sure that every team had an equal amount, not equal, but like a mixed amount of Black kids and white kids and any other kind of kids. Girls could play. It was beautiful, man. And here I am just thinking this is cool. Like, you know, my parents started a league so I could play baseball, but I didn't really understand why they started that league until later. And so as I got older and graduated from college, and started my career and picking up a camera and telling stories, I didn't know what stories I really wanted to tell. I thought I had to kind of tell. I was good at doing stuff for nonprofit organizations or the arts and everything. And then, which I did pretty good doing all that. But I didn't really think about I could use my camera for good and ways that could shine light on stories that may not be told in a truthful way, or a community that's misrepresented, you know, based on what you hear on the news. And then it took the producer of her, David Powers. He came to me and pitched this idea of wanting to do a documentary to shine light on stories in and coming out of public housing. And I was like, public housing, right? Okay. And he mentioned the name Gilpin Court. And I was like, wow, right. All right. I know that place. I drive past it every day to go to work. And I had to be honest with myself, and the guys have heard this story before. So forgive me, Yvonne and TJ, but you know, I drove past Gilpin Court every day to go home, and I'd get to this stoplight. And there were times in the wintertime when it was dark at 5:30, 6 o'clock, that I thought, oh, not that I thought it was, my life was really threatened, but I thought, you know what? I hope it's green so I don't have to sit here, because you never know what can happen. And there is a building right there by that green light. So the second interview that I did for Herd was in that building right by that stoplight. And that was with TJ. And I instantly connected with TJ, and I instantly put a name to that community. And that hit me in a very profound way, that if we can do this documentary in a way that people can watch this and put names to these communities, that they may feel more comfortable to want to connect with people or figure out a way to do something that can shine light in their own way to make connections and help people in these communities. And also to really reverse the stigma of perception, right? Of how people think of who lives in these communities. And I hope our documentary has done that. I like to think that it has in some way. So that's that, I guess. Oh, well, last thing, real quick. I have to be honest too. I didn't know if I was the right one to do this documentary. And I don't know if you're using video on this podcast, but if the viewer can't tell, I'm very white. And
no, couldn't right. tell at all.
Yeah. You can't tell from this bald head too. But anyway,
white skin.
Yeah,
white skin.
Thanks, brother.
White skin.
That's right. Thank you. But I honestly, I didn't know if I was the right one to tell the story in a very honest, truthful way. And so I told the producer, David Powers, I said, well, why don't we just kind of film a little bit, and maybe I could put like a teaser together for you to help with your fundraising efforts to be able to do this documentary. And he goes, all right, let's do that. And so the very first interview I did was with the other guy on this podcast, and that's Vaughn Johnson. And within the first 5 minutes of this interview, Vaughn, like you said, he's got a great personality and he's very dynamic. He smacked me in the face and smacked me in the heart with his personality and his story and his willing to open up and connect. And even though we grew up in very different places, Vaughn made me feel at home and connected to him. And I was just like, man, I have to do this documentary. You know, and I felt like I'm the one to help David Powers bring these stories to light. And I hope we did it in a very truthful way. We did it in a way that we just wanted them to tell their stories. We had no agenda, because that would just be completely absurd for me to think I know what it's like to grow up in these neighborhoods. And I know, you know, what a solution might be to help these neighborhoods. I just wanted to put it together so people can see and come up with their own thoughts and maybe be slapped in the heart a little bit to see their world and their community different. Because these communities are part of the Richmond community. And I think people go out of their way to not believe that, you know? And so I want to make sure that we're doing, at least I'm doing all that I think I can do to help change that in some way. So I'm going to stop talking now, Frank, because... the two no. guys that are joining you are way more dynamic than myself. So,
well, you know, I appreciate you sharing that with everyone, because I think that, you know, that's really kind of what I wanted people to understand. And shout out to mom and dad, you know, Mrs. Montgomery for raising a great son, right? And just being the people that they were, the impact that they had on my life, your life, so many other people in Farmville.
Your mom and dad too, buddy.
Right. Well, shout out to my mom and dad, you know, hometown legends, you know, Rita Mosley is, you know, rings bells in Farmville, but, you know, I really think that, you know, I talk about a lot of times with the show energy, connections to the stars, to higher powers, right? There are no coincidences in life. You and your journey, everything that you experienced from the time that we met, made you uniquely equipped and prepared to do this documentary, to have that sense of comfort and that eye and that understanding that this story needed to be told. So I commend you for doing a great and amazing job of letting these brothers and sisters, because there were also some, you know, they're not here with us today, some very powerful story and testimonies spoken by a few of the ladies that were interviewed as well. Those stories need to be heard. Like you said, people drive by those communities and many of them try to put on their blinders. They hit that red light and they're looking for it to turn green and not thinking about what's going on in that neighborhood. Right. But for, you know, I could say for whatever reasons, but because life is the way that it is and there are no coincidences, you were able to be drawn into that, right? To be charged with going in and telling that story. At least allowing them to tell that story, giving them a platform, which is truly important, because I think that it gave insight that people should have, need to have. Like you said, Richmond is a big community, and this is part of it. You can't just drive by and ignore it and think that it doesn't exist. And there's some amazing stories, some amazing people that come out of those communities with more to offer to the world than anyone could ever imagine. And I'm proud that you were able to bring two of them here on the show so we could talk to them today, TJ Thompson and Von Johnson. TJ and Von, both, thank you both for joining us. TJ, I want to start with you because I know Von has a lot to say. And I want to give him his due time, but I want to make sure you got your voice heard too. I was really impressed by your story, TJ, and I know that for those who haven't watched the documentary, or those who have watched it, probably also felt something very, very profound, especially the connection that you had with your daughter. That really touched me. The fact that you were so passionate about making sure that her life and her perspective of the world was different than the one that you saw growing up. So I want to talk to you. I want you to talk a little bit more about what you have seen coming out of your neighborhood, your community, where you're from. Like, you know, Marty and I have talked a little bit about our neighborhood. What are the things that you want people to know about that community, the things that may not get told unless it's in some salacious news report about who got shot or some type of violent report. We hear those stories all the time. But the stories of triumph, the stories of perseverance, the stories of ambition and heart and soul, those stories don't get told enough. So I thought that yours was one of those stories that encapsulated that. So just tell us a little bit about where you're from, your journey, and kind of where you are now.
Yeah, I'm from Gibbon Court. It's better known as Jackson Ward, but around here you see the same cycle, whether it's doing nothing or it's just letting life pass you by, or it's, you know, being on the block selling drugs and whatever, you know what I'm saying? And I'm just grateful that I got good people around me who, even when I would think that's what I'm supposed to do, they quickly brought me back to reality. Like, that's not you. You one of them guys, man, you gotta do something else. So I appreciate all of them for that. They was older guys, even some of my friends my age, they'll just tell me like, You just got to do better than what we doing, you know what I'm saying? Even though they was out there doing worse things, but they always told me that I was supposed to do something else. And I believe that, and it was all about figuring out what I was good at and then just seeing what they was doing and just incorporate it for my life, but not particularly do what they do. So I learned from a lot of their mistakes. And like you said, not everybody want to sell drugs and do all that stuff. Some guys just didn't have no choice. You know what I mean? So I respect all the people in the community, you know what I'm saying? No matter what they do. But it's another side to the streets too. There's a lot of people who want to do great things and they just don't know where to start. And I'm just one of those guys, man, who really didn't have a plan. We just know he wanted to do something. But the way life was just set up, it was like, you know, I had a lot of trial and error. I had to try a lot of things. I had to fail. I had to, you know, learn from my mistakes. but I'm right here. So,
no doubt, no doubt. You persevered. And I think that one of the things that really strikes me about your story is a common thread line is you had support. You had people around you to say, nah, brother, we see something in you. There's something more out here for you than what's in these streets. And for you, that made a difference, right? Having that type of big brother. Now Vaughn is itching to get on. I'm gonna let him because he's cutting up. You guys, I don't know if you guys can see it yet because we haven't decided whether we're gonna air the video. But Vaughn just put on this. I might have to just cut his video off for a little while because he's distracting us right now. He's got the perm wig on right now, and he's styling it up. And he's just got his, he's just got a pedicure and his nails done. So he's feeling really good today, ladies and gentlemen.
But I'm feeling myself right now.
He's feeling himself
I'm
right
sorry,
now.
Y'all.
Just I'm a moment sorry. Of levity. We needed that. But yeah, brother, I just think that it's really important that you have those people around you. That makes a difference, right? That those people, and I think that one of the things I wanted to really kind of point out is that even when people are doing wrong, right? You talked about some of those guys; they were selling drugs, they were involved in that street life, and yet they were still trying to get you to go the opposite direction. They knew that it wasn't the best route for them, but that was the path that they felt like they had to choose in order for them to reach whatever level, either financial success or just being able to escape that environment. But you were able to find another way. And so tell us a little bit about what you decided to do as far as, hearing that advice, hearing those suggestions and how that kind of guided you into a different direction.
I just pretty much took what they was doing. I just took exactly what they was doing. I just didn't sell drugs. So I would have a product or whatever. I just started from a simple product, toilet tissue. I got it at a certain price. And in order to make a profit, I would have to sell it at this price. Same thing they was doing. It's just, I just used it in a different way. And from each one of them, I learned something from each and every last one of them. And I took a bit of them from every time I talked to them or every time I came up with some, I took a little bit from everybody that I knew. And I incorporated in my style. And I was able to just keep on going with it, like finding my passion and stuff like that, right? Just instantly, just put myself out there, like pretty much limiting myself, because that for a long time you'd be like, why do they do this to me? Mm-hmm. Like I'm just gonna always be a kid all the time, you know what I mean? But I see what they was doing, you know what I mean? It was just, I don't know. I mean, I used to always say like, why me and stuff, and then one day I just was like, why not me? Yeah. I guess I'll figure it out. And that's just how I always been.
And a lot had to do with your mom too, right, TJ?
Yeah, too. Yep.
Yeah.
Same way.
Yeah.
Yes, it's always good to have a sense of perspective, right? You're growing, you're evolving, you're asking yourself, why me? And then why not me, right? Why can't I be that person? Why shouldn't I be that person? What's so different about me? And then the answer is nothing other than opportunity, right? I didn't have maybe the same opportunities that someone else had. And now it's about how can I make those opportunities for myself? So for you, you decided to become an author. And that was a way for you to channel some of your ambition, your thoughts, your creativity, and your spirit and be doing it in a way that you felt could help the community. Tell us a little bit about your aspirations as an author or your career as an author. You've actually working on a second publication now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I didn't set out to write a book. It all came from going to Virginia Union College. And from college, I met Dr. Kasi. She just telling everybody we had a story to tell. And I ended up just following through with it. And she gave me the process on how to write a book. And I ended up writing it. It was good and stuff like that. And then I recently just wrote another one. So
what's the name of your books? Tell us the name of your first book and your second book as well.
Yeah, my first book called Told. That's TOLD. And that's on Amazon. My second book called Study Guide. That's on Amazon too. But yeah, I basically wanted to show the community that it's different avenues and different ways you can make money and stuff too. Like this is one of the ways. Just showing them, like, it's not a bad thing to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? That's probably one of the hardest things I ever had to do in my life, is the right thing. It's like, you got to make the right decision all the time. You know what I'm saying? Even though I didn't, but, you know, that's the most hardest thing ever, like, to make the right decision, because you just don't know. And it's just get kids and the youth, like, that's a different avenue, like, to really think of something else. Like, this may not be for you, but, you know, I'm just giving them that kind of attention, like, just doing something else, doing something different, challenging yourself to do something different, not being scared of what somebody think of you and stuff like that.
Respect. And we need that. You know, you're doing exactly what we were always meant to do, as far as community. You're giving back to the community. You're taking what you've learned, what you know, and been able to apply from experience, and now you're sharing it with others so they can better their lives. So thank you for doing that, brother. We definitely need more people to take on that mantle and do what you're doing, whether they're authors or whether they're just talking to people in their community about how you can make a change. And the one of the things, and it's a perfect segue to the conversation I want to have with Vaughn, because you talk about the decisions that we make, right? And sometimes we make good decisions and sometimes we make bad decisions, really bad decisions, life-altering decisions. And for people of color, there's not a lot of room for error, right? You know, you have to constantly be thinking about, is this the best decision that I could possibly make? Because the ramifications of making the wrong decision could be life-changing, as it was for me when I was growing up, being exposed to nothing, at least I can say nothing, but a lot of, as far as just going outside of my own community, seeing nothing but drugs and street life, kind of the exchange of goods and bartering on the streets in a way that didn't seem criminal. It seemed normal, right? It seemed as simple as, you know, going to somebody's house and say, hey, ask the neighbor, can you go get, you know, borrow a loaf of bread? That was the sense of transactionality that we had, right? It was so comfortable. And so being able to make good decisions based on what you think is right, what you think is wrong, sometimes makes it even more challenging to kind of navigate that thin line. And I know, like I said, you were able to listen to some of the advice that you heard and find other products to try to sell. And that's all we really need, right? We're hustlers, we're entrepreneurs. You give us a product and we'll figure out a way to make a dollar off of it. We'll turn a dollar, you know, make a dollar out of 15 cents in no time. And somebody was able to teach you the hustle, and then you were able to apply it using different products. And so that's one of the things that we want to try to do now, is show that there's other ways that you can take your talents, your skills, your passion for making money, to get into the bag by finding legitimate ways to create that same type of outcome. It may not be as fast, but, you know, if you want to talk about fast money, we could talk about the options market. We could talk about the stock market. We could talk about, you know, the futures market. There are ways for you to make fast money, but there's a risk. And you have to educate yourself, just like you were educated on the streets, right? You have to be able to educate yourself on how to be able to make those transactions, those fast moves. And so, Vaughn, you know, you and I, we have a different story to tell. And we had a different path that we chose, which led to different consequences, different outcomes. So, Vaughn, I want you to tell a little bit about, you know, your journey. And, you know, you and I were talking before the show. You had a lot that you wanted to kind of get off your chest. Brother, this is the time. Let us know what's been you've been kind of pent up for a little bit, and I hope that you feel comfortable enough talking about that incident as well. But let us know, you know, what's on your mind, as well as kind of your journey, where you're from, and kind of your experience as well.
Oh man, how long we got?
The show's only an hour.
I'm gonna keep it short and sweet though. Yeah, from Mosby Court Projects, Richmond, Virginia. Grew up there all my life. I think we moved when we was like 15, 16, but I was still back and forth, you know, and we moved around the West End. And West End supposed to have been like a come up for us. You know, my mama, she said, we moving around the West End. We moving on up like the Jefferson. Lo and behold, she took me somewhere where I would make more money, where I would start selling drugs. You think I started selling drugs in Mosby Court, but I actually started selling drugs in the West End of Richmond, Virginia. And it was a different type of people that I was selling to, you know, so it was like, you didn't know who to trust then, you know. But coming up in Mosby Court, you know, it was a community, you know. And I remember we sitting in my house one day, Martin, and we was looking at old club pictures and stuff, you know. And I seen like all of us, I got the bottles, you know, we in the club, we showing the money. So you were like, when you see these pictures, how does it make you feel? You know what I'm saying? And yeah, it really didn't make me feel no way. I understood where I was at, but we made fun of what we had, you know what I'm saying? And those probably was the best times of my life, you know what I'm saying? Like, to actually be around guys, even though they probably didn't like me, but the fake love was good, especially dealing with a kid that came from nothing, you know what I'm saying? And we looking at the streets to solidify us. So I was trying to get solidified. So me being having all these yes men around me, you know, it solidified me to make me be like, shoot, I'm the man now, you know. And nobody, I know I didn't wake up and say I wanted to sell drugs. And like TJ, he had that mom that was like, son, just promise me you won't do this. Much as I love my mom, all she had to do was say it one time, and I probably would have changed my whole everything about myself. But she raising six kids, you know, she had a nervous breakdown, you know, to actually see your mom, like, not even know who you is. And you wouldn't even think that today. That's why. And people don't even, you know, they really don't know my story. You know, they know some of it, but to actually dig deep inside me, man, like, it's a lot. And then people ask me why God so much because let me down. And to see where my mom come from to where she at today, you know, and not just my mom, my brother, my sister, she done been on crazy situations where she was with a guy in a car, got shot up 18 times. The guy got shot 18 times. She's sitting in the passenger seat. She did not get hit one time. You know, I'm like, dang, man. So, you know, and it go on and on. But yeah, then like coming around there, like my grandma's house was the house. Like I heard TJ saying that, like, you come around grandma's house, like if you get put out, you beefing with your wife or your husband, this is where you come to. You know what I'm saying? Like grandma house, we got four beds and one room. You know what I'm saying? Like grandma, you can't go in her room. She the only room that got AC. You know? So you sweating, the walls sweating. You know what I'm saying? It's so hot in there, the PlayStation. I mean, the Atari not even working no more. You know, so just going through all that and seeing the struggle, then seeing my pops, you know, my pops, he living next door with a woman, and all my grandma had to do was knock on the wall and he coming to beat me, you know, and just seeing just crazy stuff. Then not only that, you know, like to even dig deeper, my uncle, he just passed away, rest in peace, Uncle Derek. Matter of fact, we opened up a grocery store now in his memory. But yeah, he was a pastor. He was a pastor, you know, he was one of the best pastors in Richmond. You know, and then like, I guess people think I don't remember stuff, but I do. But he was one of the best pastors in Richmond, man. And next thing you know, he was in jail. You know, and I'm like, what the heck, you know? And everybody was downing him, was dogging him out, you know? And like my uncle in jail, you know, and I didn't know what was going on, but even having to live through that situation with him, like how you go from being the man and now you done failed, you know, to like, don't nobody even acknowledge you no more, you know? So just like I say, dealing with all those situations coming up in the project, my brother, he just got locked up for 55 years, my older brother, for stealing all the cars in Richmond, Virginia. He had a write up, you know, so now my older brother gone. You know, my dad, he was already out the way. My stepdad, I didn't know. They used to call him sleeping. So I didn't know why he always nodded at the table eating food. You know, I'm young, so we don't know his head between his legs like this. We like, old dad, sleeping again. We didn't know that he was on heroin. You know what I'm saying? So just knowing, you know, growing up with that, then he back and forth from jail. You know, so you see your mom struggling. You know, you like, dad, mom, you know, I always had this dream that I want to buy her a white Lexus with cream interior. You know, that's just my dream for her. And I want to get her this big house. That was my dream. So I said, you know what? I got into the street. One of my friends, I was going around Moses one day. And he was like, man, hold this for me. And it was a whole lot of drugs. I'm like, what the heck? So I ended up breaking off some and taking it around Moses. Like, man, I got all these drugs in my house, man. What's happening? So my homie, so they like, hey, man, you got all that. Yeah, that's what's up. Let's make some money. So I started making money and people was coming to us and we making $20, $30 quick. So I went home with that night. I'll never forget. I went home that night. I was like 14, 15. I went home that night with like $100 and something. But I ain't know I done gave over $700 worth of stuff away. So I go, I say, dang, I can buy what I want to buy. And I say, dang, now is the time that I can go ahead and buy my mama this car and this house, you know what I'm saying? But I never made it to that point because you can have so many dreams and aspirations in the drug game. But anybody that knows, like, it's just never going to go the way you planned it. You know, you can be the man one day and you can be in the sand the next day.
That's one important point right there, brother. I just want to just interject because I think you were talking about like a value system, right? A sense of self-worth, right? Yeah. That we all want to try to obtain. We see
street these cred.
Street cred, exactly. We see these things in our environment. We're like, well, man, that's my mentor. That's my status bar. If I'm not there, then where am I at? It's a sense of everyone is competing against each other. Right. And we don't realize it. It's not intentional. It's like almost like playing basketball. You know, that team just a little bit better. Well, I need to get my team up a little bit better so we can win and we can score. And it becomes this self kind of perpetuating narrative where we are influencing each other to continue the cycle. Right. We're not breaking the narrative. False we're not narrative. Breaking the cycle. We're perpetuating narrative. It. We're for fault. Right. And that's the thing that I wanted you to just hit on. You're just like, you have these dreams. You want to do these things for your mom. It's not even for you. It's like, you know, yeah, you want to have some fun. You want to feel accepted. You want to be part of society. But at the end of the day, you're thinking about, damn, how can I make things better for my mom, for my family, for the people around me that I care and love about? And this is a way that I can do it. At least I think this is a way that I can do it.
I think that's the way I can do it. And then not having an education, you know, because we wasn't strict on education. It was just, you get it, you 18, once you get it to 18, you can go ahead, drop out, do whatever you want to do, you know. So my thing was just to get to 18 so I can get out of school. That means I have more time in the street to try to make my goal, which would never happen. You know, with that, I turned 18 and soon as I guess us back then doing the drug when they bring that crack law in and stuff like that, as soon as all my friends turned 18, we caught a felony. Yes, we didn't want to go to jail. So, of course, you give me a felony and I ain't got to do no jail time, but me not knowing the consequences and the repercussions behind me having one felony, that when I go back out here, because I'm going to try to get a job, I'm going to get a job because I don't want to go to jail because I just caught a charge for crack. And I know a lot of my friends in jail for selling crack and they doing a lot of time. So now I'm going to go out here and get a job and I'm going to do the right thing. But then when you go out here and you fill out your first application and say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And you have to check the joint. Yes. And then you waiting and nobody call you. Of course, all those emotions and things kick up inside you. And now it's like, man, I'm off to the races again because I done did what y'all wanted me to do. I done went out and applied for jobs. You know, I didn't have nobody in my team. I didn't have nobody in my corner that was like, look, bro, I'm going to help you through this, man. You know, I'm going to make sure you have the resources and things that you need so you ain't got to go back that way. You know, and you have your people trying to help, like your family, they try to help you. But how long can they help somebody that you 18 now, you 19, man, you got to live now. Mama ain't taking care of you no more. Now you ain't got a car because you can't get no license because you got a felony. You can owe so much in fines. But I had my fines, by the time it was all said and done, my fines was $25,000. Like, I didn't know how I was going to get a driver's license. I didn't know nothing. But it comes from me, you know, knowing people and people having resources that helped me to get to where I'm at today. You know, and a lot of guys don't have that. And like I say, coming where I came from, only thing I had to do was make a decision. We always, we always found things to do in the community that we will be happy with each other because it felt like everybody outside the community like just hated us. Like, it's like when I heard Martin and David saying that they don't know this type of stuff going on. They didn't know this type of stuff. I'm like, huh? Where were y'all at under rock? Like, I'm confused because I used to hate going to MCB and I'm walking past a white person car and I hear the doors locked. I'm 13, 12 years old at this time. So that right there, and even till today, is still a trigger for me. When I walk past somebody's car and I hear our doors like, and they not my color, and I hurry up and look at them ready to say something like, hey, we still there though. Like, that's not, you know, so having to deal with all that, then not only that, you have to hold a certain standard when you're in these communities anyway. I don't care where you're at. And the whole time, a lot of y'all probably don't know, but one thing about it, I'm always, my life is an open story right now. You know what I'm saying? The community TJ from and the community where I'm from, they beefing. They going crazy right now. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, dang, bro, like, and I tried to get these guys to do songs together. I know I'm all over the place, but I didn't know how serious it was. And then you got a guy like me and TJ coming together for one good common cause, man. And we didn't know each other. We don't know each other, but we're coming together because our hearts is in the right place. Because what we're trying to do, what we're trying to do is better, not just ourselves, because they say once we get better, then everything around us started getting better. You know, so I see that in him, man. I see his folk, and I'm like, dang, bro, if we really put our heads together, like we, and they see a person from Mosley and Jackson Wall, like I cut some of these guys from Jackson Wall hair and everything, you know, so it's just like, dang, man, like, how can I get these guys to really mold ourselves into doing something right? Because they really want to do something right. Who want to wake up every morning like, man, I'm going to kill somebody, or I'm going to kill somebody today? Nobody want to do that, because you have to live with that for the rest of your life. So like I say, you know, not to get off subject, but I just wanted to make tell you that too, Mark. You know what I'm saying? The same community as me and him from, they going crazy, you know? So it's just like, dang, man. So to hear, you know, even to hear Martin like, dang, man, he had the light. And he just like, dang, man, I hope nothing crazy. Like, that's, you know, it just make us feel so, it make me feel so alienated. Like, dang, man, like, is it that serious? Was I that blind? To know that, like, people don't even know this type of stuff going on. Like, we don't have no book. We not putting these drugs in these communities. Like, just come in, help us out. Just to, man, all I need y'all to tell me is this is gonna be all right.
And I just kind of want to put a finer point on that, Von, because you hit on some very, very key points there, brother. When you talk about the transition, right? Like, once you can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. I just want to put a little bit of finer point on what you said, because you hit on some very, very profound points there. You talked about, you know, getting your first felony and then coming out and wanting to transition out of that lifestyle, and how many barriers that were in your way, how little support that you have. Like when you're in the game and when you're on top, everybody's around you. Everybody's your friend. Everybody wants to help you. But when you started from scratch, from the bottom, and you won't have that, like you said, that street status, that same social status that you had once before, and you're trying to do the right thing versus going back to the way, you know, reducing recidivism is real. You know, recidivism is real, people. Yeah. We have so many barriers that keep us from being able to make that change. Like you said, whether it's getting a job, or whether it's finding some new career path, or finding a mentor, or finding support, those things are still required. Those things are still needed. And you talked about Martin and others who have blinders on, who don't know about what's going on in those communities. You're like, damn, are we still there? Yes, brother. Sadly, in 2021, we are still there. We still need people like you to tell us about what's going on. People like TJ to tell us about what's going on in those communities. Because a lot of people don't stop at those red lights and make that right turn and find out what's going on. A lot of people don't understand the so many dynamics that goes behind someone like you, whose life has had so many different ups and downs, has been exposed to so many different challenges. And then they point the finger like, well, that's all they know how to do, or that's all they want to do. Nobody wants to go out and sell drugs. Like you said, nobody wants to wake up in the morning and think about how I'm going to have to kill somebody to stay alive or to survive. That's not where we want to be. But it's the environment that we are in that has so few opportunities, so few resources to be able to guide us out of that we're often caught in that kind of crossfire, and we are often left with facing the consequences. So you've talked about, you know, you and TJ being from separate neighborhoods and you kind of coming together. You also talked about you being a barber and cutting some of those guys' hair and you wanting to do that. That's part of your passion to kind of bring these communities together, bring people together, go into these communities and make a difference. Tell us a little bit more about that. You were talking a little bit before the show about those aspirations. So I want to kind of get you to dig into that a little bit too.
Yeah, so as far as being the barber, my thing was, you know, when I was younger anyway, I always was told I wasn't going to be nothing. You know, so I always wanted to be a barber. It's just nobody knew that. And then going the way I was going, you needed a GD or a high school diploma. And I didn't see that happening, that because I ain't want to go to school. But while I was incarcerated, I was able to go get my GED. I was able to go to barber school. And then when I came home, I had the resources. Like this lady, Miss Butler, I really appreciate it. She brought me my first pair of clippers and my first pair of trimmers. And sometimes we need that extra help, or we need somebody to just help us a little bit. We don't want much. I'm telling you, man, especially if you're a hustler. And like I say, TJ, he don't grab, man. I see them sell toilet paper. Like, but these guys, man, they will sell water to a well, man. It's just the opportunities are very slim. And even with us, me being a barber, like, it changed my life, man. And I just, my thing is, how can I help somebody? I don't want to charge. I want to take it in the jail where I got mine from. Even if it's not in the jail, I know guys that's on the street that are willing to get that barber's license and stuff like that. Not only that, now I'm in the process of getting my CDL. You know, a lot of my friends, they got their own trucking business. A lot of my friends got their own home improvement business. A lot of my friends got their own home improvement business. And they can't hire nobody because they don't have the finances and stuff to really hire nobody. Or they don't get the contracts like the big people get the contracts, you know. So my thing is, how can we come together as a people? How can we build an agenda where it's people, not just like myself, but people that are willing to help and give back? Because everybody say they're willing to help and give back. Like, oh, let's go and give back. We got the people in position, people to do the training. Got the right position that's already been in this, get that straight first. You know, so and one thing I about barbering, like I don't play with it. Like, you cannot come in there trying to make money. I understand you're gonna make your money, but man, it's a passion for me. It's not about cutting hair, man. It's about touching people. Like, I'm not even like I tell people all the time, 90% of my haircut is my attitude. You know, it's being able to recognize when somebody really needs you, man, because we're not just barbers. Like we're counselors, resource center, you know, we That's know right. where everything at, you know, like, you want a book to read, go out at TJ, you need a videographer, go out there, you know, like, but we're those people, you know, so that's why I say it's bigger than barbering for me. A girl came in the shop the other day, she said, hey, Bon, I know this 17-year-old, he on your level. I said, baby girl, I'm sorry, but nobody's on my level, and I'm not trying to shun the other guy, but I know where I came from. And I know what I do, you know, and I know how I feel about it, how I feel about Barbara. But being able to do stuff like that, being able to go back in these communities and just, matter of fact, they can let us go to the, they have like community centers inside of these projects, you know,
That's right.
where we can, like the Calhoun Center, they done already stopped us from going to Mosley Court, any of the centers in there, so they done blocked that off. But they have like the Calhoun Center where I can take time, 3-4 hours out my day, and I can go over there and teach these guys how to cut hair. I can teach these guys how to build a wall, how to put a door on, you know, where we can go in, where they seeing familiar people like ourselves, where TJ can go in the Calhoun Center, teach these people, teach the men, the young men, women, whoever, how to write a book and get it published. Like, we got it. We got everybody we need. Only thing we need is people behind us, you know what I'm saying, that can help us to get the resources and stuff. That's it. And that's, and then I feel, and Mr. Frank, like you said, you know, you, and I'm telling you, I'm coming, I got a great program that I'm writing up right now. It's called Back to the Basics, you know, because I tell people, everybody's out of position. The mother's out of position, the daddy's out of position, the kid's out of position, and we just need to get back to the basics where everybody's back in position, where the father can be the father of the house, the mother can be the mother, and the child will be the child, and you know, but it's just a lot that we need to get to, you know.
No doubt.
Getting back to the basics, that's just number one goal for everybody. Not just, and then like you said, like even with people not knowing how our community works, look, we're gonna have those type of classes too. Come on, somebody like Martin, me and Martin sitting beside each other, you know what I'm saying? You have to know who that person is. You gotta meet that person, know something about that person before you judge him. You know what I'm saying? Because I know I get judged all the time. Goals, tattoos. Oh, he's a thug. No, I'm not, though. No, I'm not. Not no more.
We all capable of evolving, brother, and all capable of changing. Yeah. And so that's beautiful. I just want to bring TJ back into the conversation. Martin, feel free to jump in as well. But, you know, the idea that, you know, communities can come together, right? That there are people who have the ambition and the drive to make that change, to go back into the community. Like, you know, TJ was talking about the books that he wrote, how he wants to be able to influence people that are in the same community, give them different options to look at different survival strategies and techniques. And just to be clear, the SEED Initiative, Social Education for Economic Development, we got your back. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk. Like I talked to you before about some of the other organizations coming to the table, as well as a few other that I'm involved with. They'll be more than happy to join with you. And we'll put our heads together, come sit at the table. We'll all work together and figure out what we can do to support Back to the Basics and anything else that you guys are doing to try to uplift those communities. I have some good people that are around me. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it's awesome because I got guys, you know what I'm saying? Y'all think these guys, they are motivated. They ready. And they got, they still in the community. They just need an outlet, man. They don't want to be out there no more. I'm telling you, they told me I'm the only person that come around that want to see them do better. And I'm like, huh? Like everybody, what are those people that's getting all this grant money that's saying they coming around? Like you say, I'm the only person that come around that want to see y'all. Oh, because I ain't got no hamburgers and hot dogs and I really talk to y'all. I get on, you know what I'm saying? I want to know how y'all feel. I hug on them and everything. Mm-hmm. Man, I take them to the store and I got to buy their stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and invite but me, brother. We're going to set up some dates where we can have some online Zoom conferences like this, discussions. We can do whatever we need to do to bring the awareness and the resources that we can to the community, because it's important that we start somewhere. And so the SEED Initiative has definitely got your back. Everybody, I want you to tune in next week for part 2 of episode 7. We're not done yet. The conversation is just getting started. I want you to definitely tune in next week again, 10 o'clock a.m. Saturday mornings. Thanks again for joining us. Love all the support. Continue to please follow, like, share. All your donations are keeping coming. We are appreciative of every dollar that comes in. We're grassroots. We're building this message. We're building this economic growth movement from scratch. So we appreciate your support. Everyone, please check out TJ's book. It's on Amazon.com. I have the link posted on Back in the BLK. I have the link posted on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, at backinthebLK.com. You'll be able to find links to Herd, to TJ Thompson, to his book, to his story, and Von Johnson. We're going to have Back to the Basics, going to be something that you hear more about. So stay tuned. Everybody, be safe. Be well and be empowered. Thank you for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for tuning in. Stay locked into this stream every Saturday, 10 o'clock a.m. on ljdnetwork.com. You can find us on backinthebLK.com or blacktalknetwork.com.